Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Not bad. We're almost out of Mountain Dew Livewire. We only have 2 copies of Minecraft 7 left in stock. The toilet is acting up again. Oh, and the Terra people crapped all over the roof again. So, pretty much business as usual.
You know, you still haven't told us what your plans are for this year's Summer Film Fest. And it's already June.
Oh, Mike. But I do have a plan for this summer. And it's going to fix all those letter-writing bastards that have been the bane of my existence for the last 2 years.
Ooh, a whole promotion bred from spite. I love it. So what do you have in mind?
You remember last year when all those trolls wrote in complaining about the dance-themed Summer Film Fest? Saying things like, enough of these dumbass chick flicks and more movies that people actually watch. Well, I figured I'd get back these little basement dwellers by giving them exactly what they want. A whole summer of comic book movies. Female-led comic book movies. And we'll call it Hot Dave Summer Film Fest Volume 5. The future is super female.
Nice. Genius. So, what's up first?
Let's keep it simple. Start in the beginning with an A. Aeon Flux.
Oh, perfect. An anime is a great way to kick off the promotion.
No. Aeon Flux, the movie.
The movie? It's gonna be a long summer, isn't it?
In the beginning, there was a dream. A dream that became a film fest. Known throughout the universe as the greatest collection of motion pictures ever assembled. Now, Apocalypse Video brings you the 5th installment of Hot Dave's Summer Film Fest. The future is super female. A gathering of the best and worst in female-led comic book movies. From Barbed Wire to Barbarella, Catwoman to Tank Girl, they're all here. And they're all fabulous. Step aside, fellas, because these girls get it done. On this week's episode, Charlize Theron must face her past and free the world of Bregna from the clutches of the Good Child regime using her powers of backflips and wooden acting. It's Aeon Flux.
We are in the last city on Earth. Some call it the perfect society, but others know better. Government control is total. People disappear as though they never existed. But there are rebels who believe in freedom and who fight in the name of the disappeared. I am one of them.
An assignment. The government's protecting something. We want you to eliminate Chairman Goodchild. Do this, and we will have our victory.
Ready?
Always. I keep off the grass.
She's coming.
Get to a safe place.
Good boys.
Our world is beautiful. Worth preserving at any cost.
You're pathetic.
I'm afraid we're going too far.
This is a war. And people on all sides die.
Amateurs. You may want to duck. Life once. Now all I have. have is a mission.
The year is 2011. A virus kills 99% of the world's population. A scientist, Trevor Goodchild, develops a cure. The 5 million survivors live in Bregna, the last city on Earth. The Goodchild dynasty rules for 400 years. Rebels emerge to challenge the Goodchild regime. We cut to later. Aeon Flux, who has a fly in her eye. Some called Bregna the perfect society. Some call it the height of human civilization. But others know better. The Goodchilds built Bregna to ensure us a future. They built the Relico, a memorial to remind us of what we survived. They built walls to protect us. They tell us that outside, nature has retaken the world. But the real problems lie within. We are haunted by sorrows we cannot name. People disappear and our government denies these crimes. The Goodchild regime provides for us as long as we stay quiet. So we trade freedom for a gilded cage. But there are rebels who refuse to make that trade. Who fight to overthrow a government that silences us. Who fight in the name of the disappeared. They call themselves the Monikins. I am one of them. I am also your host, Dave. I'm joined again for this breathtaking adaptation of an anime classic by Michael.
I cloned everybody.
So if that intro title cards and that intro line from Aeon Flux, played by Shirley Cedarron, doesn't light you up and get you excited for this summer film fest, I don't know what will. Okay, all serious anime voice stuff aside, I kind of suspected we were in for trouble when a title card appeared. A title card can be good sometimes, you know, if you have an overly complicated world, sometimes it's okay to throw a few details. I mean, Star Wars is a good example,
obviously. Star Wars has a title card, yeah.
But sometimes it's like a forebearer of things to come, like, uh-oh. And so not only do we get a title card, so I'm bracing a little bit for like, uh-oh, this is going to be some convoluted bullshit. But then we get that narration right after that from Charlize Theron, and I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, this is, you said convoluted right up at the top, and like, not to get too far into it, but this is one of the most convoluted movies I can recall seeing in recent memory. Like, it is so, like, all over the place.
You're just shaking your head right now.
I mean, that was like watching the movie. It was like,
well, it's interesting. It's so convoluted. There's so much shit, and yet, like, they don't bother to set up. I don't feel like they do a good job. It feels like there's a movie we didn't see, like, before this, that set up these characters, that make me care about these characters. And also, I don't, maybe they set this in the movie, maybe you can remind me, but, like, okay, so, long story short, spoiler for Aeon Flux 2005, in an effort to save the human race, they actually cloned people.
Because they cloned all the survivors. Like, a pandemic killed basically everybody, except for, like, a couple million people were left in the whole human population. And they cloned all the people that survived because they couldn't figure out how to cure the disease, sterility. I think, right? They just knew that these people are immune. We don't know why. We're just going to clone them. And so for 400 years, they've been repeatedly cloned. And there's a thing that in the movie that I don't think this... I don't know. Listen, this may surprise the listeners, may surprise you, Dave. I don't know much about cloning, but I don't I don't think that if you clone people...
It's a
people,
real growth industry, though, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. in this movie, the way it's portrayed is like the more they get cloned, the more they like start to degrade or something, or they're
in
like
in terms of like emotions. Is that what it is?
Yeah, like it's not physically. Okay. They're not physically falling apart, but like they're having like weird memories of their past lives. I think is what's going on, and it's confusing them, and they're all mixed up. And
but like they're like it leads them to be emotionless. Is that kind of the deal?
Maybe.
Because everyone in this movie is a fucking robot. I'm like, are they clones or robots?
I think that's the direction or something, or yes, the editing. Maybe we'll get into it, but this was a really fussed with movie.
The director
was not happy with what happened to this. Karen Kusama, who made like real stuff. Like she made Jennifer's Body. She's executive produced Yellow Jackets, which I haven't seen people like.
People rave about.
She's not bad, I don't think. But this movie is like a disaster. And I
could hear the studio execs now yelling at her, make it more like The Matrix.
Yeah.
Matrix.
So there is a director's cut that I don't know if it's like out there available, but it has 30 extra minutes. Is totally recut. So yeah,
okay.
This is probably you know what this reminded me of a little bit is the theatrical cut of Blade Runner, where you get the Harrison Ford narration, you know?
Yeah.
Which is clearly, I think this movie might be trying to be a little bit of Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, definitely. Yeah.
Aesthetically.
Well, I guess I said Matrix earlier, I meant in like the fashion and like the action scenes.
And the wires. I mean, yeah, you can see the wire. I mean, you can't see the wires, but you can see the wires.
But I just like the mood, like when she walks, she does like that sexy, like,
So did you see any of the anime?
I haven't, but I was surprised to find out that it was on MTV in 1991.
It's liquid television. Like the crazy thing, this is why the plot is, well, I don't know if it's why the plot is so convoluted, but like the thing about the anime is, first off, there's barely any of it. Like, The way that this ran, do you know what liquid television was? Liquid television was...
I watched Beavis and Butthead, and that was it.
I think Beavis and Butthead might have started on liquid television. I'm not sure, but I think they did. Liquid television rules. Maybe we should cover for the show sometime. It's all on YouTube. But it was half-hour episodes of little animated shorts. And it's just like crazy stuff. So it's like... crazy, like,
so was this like a thing like Liquid Television on MTV?
Yeah, well, it'd be okay. Like Liquid Television was a half-hour show on MTV.
Okay,
and the half-hour show would be comprised of a whole bunch of short animated shorts from various different people and different things. And so Aeon Flux was one of those.
Okay.
So like season one in quotes of Aeon Flux is like 20 minutes because it's just these 2 minute shorts put together. So that's what this was, it was just these 2 minute shorts and it was, there wasn't like a plot. Like the plot was they wanted to do a stylish spy v spy thing. So
it's basically just a bunch of scenes. Like we see in the movie, like running on like, poison tipped grass and jumping around.
100%. And like the main woman Aeon is like the main character, and then the good child is just like the bad guy, but we don't know anything about them. We don't know anything about the world.
Okay.
There's one line of dialogue in the whole thing, and it's just her, and I think it's in the second season, which is again another half hour of just these clips, and it's her just going like plop as she like throws something. I think that's like the only line that's spoken. So it's basically two half hours of like seasons that are just like really cool, stylish, very sexualized, like spy versus spy stuff that was really popular. And a funny thing about that, she dies at the end of each one.
Really?
That was like a running thing, is she dies every time. It did get picked up for a full-on show after that and had one season of like traditional half-hour shows. People are... I didn't see any of that for the show. I saw some of the like shorts for before we did this, but I haven't seen any of the show. But I do know fans are divided on that. Like, it's a different tone than the animated shorts. Like, there's dialogue. It's more traditional, like, cartoons from the 90s kind of thing. So, but that has, like, a semblance of a plot, at least. Although, it again, from what I can tell, is really not anything like this.
To write home about. Now it's all starting to come together, because I did have the distinct thought, no shade to, I forget her name, the director.
The director of this movie. So the person who like created Aeon Flux is Peter Chung. The director of this movie was Karen Kusama.
Well, I had the distinct, I had the feeling that most of the big visual flourishes, and especially some of the action set pieces, I'm like, this is probably straight from the anime, isn't it? Like, this is like adapting that, the like specific shots. Like, especially with the opening with like the fly going into her eye.
Yeah, that's the opening of the show, like the first episode. Yeah, there's definitely like shots for shots done on this.
I had that vibe.
Real quick, while we're talking about the animated show, I gotta say, Peter Chung, that I'm guessing that name doesn't sound familiar, but he did animation. He did other animation before Aeon Flux, and he was responsible for a show that we've covered on this show.
What?
I see if you can. I don't know if you're gonna guess.
Show?
It. Yeah, he was. He did the character design and the intro for a show that we've covered on this show.
This wasn't Rugrats, was it?
It was Rugrats.
It was Rugrats. How did I know that? What the fuck?
So he did Rugrats and then Aeon Flux.
You know, actually, it makes sense because see that.
I think you can kind of see it, like the weirdo ways that they like move around.
And also, like, if I remember correctly, we talked about there were several episodes where like the Rugrats had like great escape style, like big escapes, and probably did stuff like this where they're like jumping around and doing crazy shit. Okay, I can picture that.
The animated the animated shorts are pretty funny. Like they're kind of cool. My favorite thing about them is they like are kind of. It's really surreal. It's really like weird. And one of the things they do is they parody like action movies a lot. Like there's like parodying like the destruction of them. Like there's a scene where she's like running through a hallway with machine guns on each hand, just like mowing down bad guys.
And we kind of get that in the climax of this movie. She's just shooting like 50 guys.
And so but they don't I wish they had leaned into the way the show did. So like they get the scene where she's doing that, right? And she's just like running, you know. And then it cuts to like, you know, the aftermath, and it's literally like it's like panning, and there's like thousands of piled up bodies. Like it looks like the Terminator when they cut to the present day. There's so much blood that she's like knee deep in blood. Like it's flooded the hallway.
This movie should have been rated R, because I did have several times where I'm like, where's the blood? Where's the like excessive anime style gore?
Yes.
That would have been a point in this
That is a
favor.
Huge problem with this movie, is it needs to be
rated R. Well,
especially
during the climax, because she kills like 80 people. Like she shoots like all these guys in this courtyard. It's the climax of the movie, and it's so bloodless, and it felt like a video game. It felt like waves of bad guys at the end just coming, nameless bad guys that look identical.
And it didn't read as like the way that the show did, is like clearly like a parody of like... Like
well, and that's what was so funny, because like you're watching the movie and like Aeon Flux and these like four snipers kill what must be like 80 people. But yet when it cuts to the aftermath, you see like maybe 10 people spread out like dead on the ground. You're like, that doesn't add up. Those numbers don't. but it gets me thinking, it makes sense that that this movie is based on a bunch of shorts that didn't really have a story per se, because there were several. So like the world of Aeon Flux, this is one of those sci-fi movies where it's like technology. They basically have a piece of technology that can do any specific, hyper specific task. You know what I mean? It's like Q's from James Bond's Wet Dream. Like, there's so many things. Like, it's like just technology can do anything. She's a superhero. I don't know why she's a superhero. The movie doesn't bother to explain why she has these seemingly superhuman abilities. And it's just like, again, because all the characters are like emotionless robots or clones, it's like, I don't care about anybody. I don't care about their plight.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, like, it's frustrating because. This is from 2005. There's still a lot of sets being used. There's a lot of crazy, wardrobe and stuff like that. The world could be cool. Like, there's a lot of cool visual flourishes.
It kind of feels like it's like Blade Runner, but if Blade Runner were, like, a little cleaner and during the day.
Yes.
During the daytime. Like,
yes, that's
which
exactly
is like a not,
right.
It's not a bad... Like, yeah, there's parts... There's ideas for, like, how this movie looks that are... pretty cool, you know.
Well, and I thought they did it. I mean, there's some CGI that doesn't hold up, especially chiefly at the end when she's like dangling from the
The clone machine or whatever.
The thing that looks like the villain from Nope, you know, the alien thing from Nope.
You know what I was thinking? It does. I was thinking, you ever play StarCraft?
Yeah.
There's like the Zerg overlords that like is 100% one of those that float like, around like a little balloon.
But it's but honestly, like my one takeaway I had from this movie, it's a shame. I feel like this could have been good because the world, it's an interesting blend. I was just kind of shocked by how much stuff seemed to be done practically, like in real locations. Like you really take that for granted with modern movies. How much of it looks just kind of the same bland sort of photography that they use in modern day movies. Like this was colorful. There was actual sets. They were filming in outdoor locations. I'm like, this is cool. But the thing
it's
that
not, it's not like a green screen mess
no,
or anything.
No, not at all. Well, there's some action sequences that are like that, but right. That's obviously an exception. But it's just frustrating because you have this, what could be a cool world. I would like to dig deeper into this world that they present us with. But I don't care about any of the characters. So it's just like, sucks. It's unfortunate.
And this is like where it's tough to blame a director in a movie like this that has been like, you know, destroyed after it was made. But I feel like for me, one of the biggest problems is the way the actors are kind of all, I feel like everyone's kind of playing it at
We've
the same.
We've all taken a chill pill.
It reminds me of the prequels, like the Star Wars prequels where like, where's someone have some pizzazz? Somebody.
I sense a threat, a plot to overthrow the government. We must act quickly.
Yeah. It's like, Aeon, you know, you must take the thing to the thing.
Oh, well, and that scene when like all the bad guys are in their like circular, you know, the overlords.
Oh my God.
They're all talking very calmly, and this movie kind of
starts out where there's like, I mean, listen, the plot of this movie is like a blur, but like there's basically like there's this pretty early on. We get like an action scene. Charlize Theron and her Sidontra, Sophie Okonedo.
Who has surgically swapped her feet out with hands.
They're basically pretty early on. It's like it's set up. They're heroes and they're going on this like journey
and
they're going through like this action sequence and infiltrating, and I'm kind of like in when that's happening, right? Like stuff's going on
it's
and I'm
goofy.
Like
yeah,
I mean I'm into it, right? I'm munching my popcorn, and then it just like it just cuts to these boring guys in a circle and just scream. It's like so they put the emergency brakes on the film, which is just like, whoa, hold on, this was too exciting, we need to stop this. I mean, it literally is. It's like 5 minutes then of just like scheming the thing. And then it just cuts back anyway back to about like cool shit's going on.
There was a lot of ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da in this movie. It really brought you back to the time. I'll say that this does feel like a time capsule movie.
And like the show, at least the shorts, it was just the cool stuff. There was no like cut to boardroom where they're like, the people are becoming restless with the policies of our. You know, I honestly like don't even know what they were talking about. I couldn't tell you.
This is when
you
need a crazy, like, here's the thing. I think on paper, there's a lot I like about this movie on paper. Like, I love dystopian sci-fi movies about a civilization living in an encased, you know, like society. Like, you know, there's the outside and then we're living
snow
behind
piercer,
the walls.
Kind of
Snowpiercer. I love shit like that. I'm a sucker for stories like that. And I think the the overall villain plot is actually really cool in terms of post-apocalyptic movies. Like 99% of the population is wiped out. Like we found a cure, but the twist, like, you know, this is like a very kind of Soylent Green type twist. It's like it turns out we're just cloning people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. People are sterile. Like, people aren't being born. But then you get this twist. And I think, again, cool on paper. You got this twist that some people are having babies on their own. Like, what the fuck? But now
the people in charge are trying to, like, hide it, you know?
Yes. And you have this. You have these creepy overlords who sit in a circle trying to hide it. And one of these guys is just dastardly. And it's like, no. Again, on paper, like, I like the villain's motivation. Like, no. Like, we're going to survive like this. This is the, you know, we what does he say? He says something like, we beat evolution or we beat nature.
That's
cool. But it's delivered, and it needs to be delivered by a snarling, you know, mustache twirling villain. But instead it's delivered by,
we beat evolution. We won.
Yeah. Why are you being like this?
Bow, 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 bow.
Yes. intercut with ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. It's just
anyway, like, back to the movie. Like, Charlize Theron is doing cool stuff again.
It
feels like two different movies at times. Like,
yeah,
or not even two different movies, but more just like we're watching a movie and then we're just cut to like this other boring stuff.
These boring
that, like,
boardroom type guys. Yeah, cut to that. Cut back to her like throwing these balls that come in and like ride in on their own and blow shit up
She's doing backflips on blade grass and stuff, and then just cut back to the boardroom. Like,
it was so ridiculous. Like, anyway. And again, that's the fun
she
stuff.
She does the splits, and then like she does the splits.
Oh, that was a trailer
then, like,
moment.
Falls. Yeah,
I remember that from the trailer. Cool. Like, yeah, she falls down like this. It's a Mission Impossible riff for like her, like, oh god, the thing's like right at my neck or whatever.
There's cool stuff. There's cool moments, mostly involving Charlize Theron.
We should say, what is it with the future? Like, I guess in the future, everyone just decided it's all variations of the bowl cut. That's all the hairstyles in the world.
Yeah, Charlize Theron has like, it's got to be a wig, right, that she's wearing. It looks so weird.
I would imagine, yeah. And let's talk about her look, Anne Flux's look. She has the most impractical gun holster I have ever seen. It's on her back.
Do you know what the cartoon looks like?
No.
Oh, my God. You got to pull it up from
Chad.
So
it's completely different.
It's not completely different, but it's like, why they didn't. It would have been rated R if they did it
I'm guessing it's like heavy metal inspired. There's like boobs showing or something like that.
She's basically wearing like a G-string.
Animes love to do that. I mean, look at what's her face from Cowboy Bebop, Faye Valentine. She's basically wearing how would you describe her outfit in Cowboy Bebop?
I don't like the short shorts.
Yeah, like, they're held up like by a string or something. We've said it before on the show. Animators are perfs.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty like gratuitous. Like I'm sure Charlize Theron is like, I'm not.
It's like, no,
that.
I'm not. Redesign the costume, then we'll talk.
Like it would have been rated R if just for that, for sure. Yeah.
But I'll say this though, we while her main costume isn't heavy metal inspired, her evening wear is. It's, if you remember, she gets up out of bed and it's like this bra that's like that has these two long straps that go down into her underwear.
It looks like something that would be in David Lynch's Dune. That was the vibe. I was kidding. Yeah, like a beaded top that's like going from her boobs to like, it's so. It's so ridiculous.
There is somebody who fought for one of those skimpy outfits and won. It's like, we gotta have one of them.
We gotta have something for the fans. Come on, Charlize.
As much as she's not in that, it sounds like this gratuitous heavy metal inspired outfit from the show, but like she still nevertheless is like her whole like attitude, like, you know, she generally walks in this movie like she's walking on like a fashion runway. Like that's the way she walks throughout the entire movie. And it's just like, it's ridiculous.
It's very like Carrie Ann Moss from The Matrix, like Trinity, that vibe. But yeah, it's, they needed some pizzazz, like in this, like something. It all just kind of like everyone plays it the same, and I think that's like a huge problem.
Which again, throughout the movie, I was like, is it because they're clones? Is that why they're acting lifeless? But clones are humans, so it's like, it's not like clone. I feel like they never established that clones are emotionless. This is an equilibrium, you know, where they're like no emotions. It's just like, yeah, you're right. Everyone's the same. It doesn't feel like anyone really stands out.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, this isn't like the worst movie we've seen, though.
No.
I don't know. Like, maybe it's just weird enough that it does like.
And short kind of enough. We should say this is like an hour and a half long.
Right. It is an hour
Thankfully.
And a half. And it's a long hour and a half, but it's not. Like, you know, what did we watch that we were saying, like, I was saying, like, this might be the worst thing we've ever seen recently that was an hour and a half?
Was it Encino Man?
Yes, it was Encino Man. Yeah, this was better than Encino Man.
That was literally, like, I think, the last movie we watched.
It was. Yeah, this didn't feel like, I didn't feel
this
like
is the
that.
Worst movie we've seen since the last movie we've
the
seen.
The last movie we've seen. No, it's better than Encino. Put that on the poster for Anaflex. It's better than Encino Man. But it is tough to talk about this movie because it is so convoluted.
Yeah.
And it's hard to like pick out like memorable moments other than like the stuff Charlize Theron did. And like,
you know, actually, I will say one memorable character in the movie, and he's usually pretty memorable, is Pete Postlethwaite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the guy in like the floating nope alien thing that's supposed right. to be a memoriam to all the people that died, but it's actually like where they clone people or whatever.
Yeah, and he's like, I've been waiting 400 years for you to break the
End
cycle.
It all.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm like, tired of this shit.
I don't know why, again, like, why now? Why? It is like she's special. I don't understand why she's special.
Neither do I.
Okay, good. Good. It's not just me.
It's not like there's a scene when they programmed, like, we're going to program into you superhuman traits or something like
no,
that.
No, they say, like, you're the most successful clone. And, like, I don't understand why.
Like, why?
What is more successful?
Here's the conundrum. It's like,
what about
we're
hands
saying,
for feet, girl? What's she seems.
Here's the conundrum. We're saying that it's like, we don't care about any of these characters. We feel like there's a whole movie we missed out on. Maybe it's like, in any other world, I'd be like, yeah, give us back that half hour. But I don't want that because the characters in this are so bland that an extra half hour would be hell to,
right,
to sit through.
Right.
That.
Yeah, I know. I wonder, maybe the studio was right to cut it. Maybe they were like, listen, this sucks. Let's just make it short. So it's like not, you know, people aren't falling asleep or whatever.
This was a failure, too. We should say apparently it had a budget somewhere between $55 and $62 million. It only grossed $52 million. This was a failure.
Not a travesty.
Not a travesty, say, but definitely a flop.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know, it is like there's parts of this movie that you want to root for. Like it is based off a kind of cool property. You know, it's a big budget movie directed by a woman who like. It feels like any time like a woman has a movie that's like at all not a success, they get like blacklisted. Like they're never gonna make like Patty Jenkins is like never gonna make a movie again because the second
also,
Wonder Woman
another,
didn't do well.
I think Lexi Alexander, she directed that Punisher Warzone movie, which apparently I vaguely remember it, but apparently it's like this hyper violent movie and everyone was like
people
aghast
like that
at
movie
it.
I hear about.
But that's the thing, it's come back around and people at the time were aghast at it, and she was literally saying at the time, like, I'm literally just adapting like panels from the comic. Like, you know what I mean? It's like I'm not putting my own crazy flourishes into. I'm not like a sicko. I'm literally adapting the comic as is. But she got blacklisted. Like I think she made maybe one other movie after Punisher 2.
Yeah. Well, yeah. At least Karen went on to make Jennifer's Body. That's I think that movie was a success, right?
I will say, like, there are some memorable moments in this movie. There was a moment in the movie where I literally felt like Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. Like, seriously, just like, and there she is, glowing hair, big as life, with bugs coming out of her mouth. And I'm speaking specifically when Frances McDormand, of all people, shows up.
Frances McDormand's in this movie.
She's fucking in this movie out of nowhere. She has this tiny role. Well, here's the thing. She has a
That's
tiny
kind of an
role.
Important role. She's like...
Well, no, she has a tiny...
She's like the leader of the resistance.
Exactly. It's a tiny role as a character who is super important to the story that we barely see. She is the leader of this resistance who apparently gets, you know... we find out that the whole resistance basically gets tricked into killing this Trevor Goodchild guy because his brother... is pissed off that he's trying to come up with a cure to all this stuff, to cloning. He's found it. And he basically sets in motion, like, get in contact with, he sends his minions, get in contact with the resistance and we'll let them know how they can kill Trevor Goodchild, but don't trace it back to us. It's like, there's interesting stuff on paper, but none of the characters are interesting. I don't care about any of them. And it just all comes off kind of convoluted at the end.
It is. Yeah, like, okay, this is a better movie than Encino Man. But this is... I gotta keep saying that. But this is, like, maybe the most convoluted movie I can think of seeing, you know, and I can't think of a movie I've seen that was more just, like, convoluted.
Well, a lot of it feels like, especially when she's Anne Mush. My brain is mush right now.
Aeon Mush is good. There
are several scenes where it feels like Aeon Flux is going from place to place, and it's like, we got to do this thing, we got to do that thing. But and it's just, the audience is just trying to keep up. You know what I mean? Like, and they're doing all this crazy sci-fi shit, and it's just like, I don't know what any of this means.
Well, you said the cure is for cloning. Like, that's a big thing, is they're like trying to come up with a cure.
They figured out how to like make people be able to give birth again to cure the sterility.
Yeah, that was like a thing. Is I was like, what? Because they say, like, nature has taken over the outside, right? Yeah. And, like, you look outside the walls of the city, it seems like, it's not like Dread where there's, like, a wasteland.
It's like a lush jungle.
Yeah, it's a lush, habitable planet. And I'm like, why?
Yeah, why I didn't understand that.
Why don't they go outside? Back outside? Why are they in here? Why?
Yeah.
At first I was thinking it was going to be a thing where it's like, oh, the people up the top are just lying to you, and people think it's like a wasteland out there, but it's actually beautiful. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, and there's a moment at the end when, like, she crashes, like, the memorial nope monster alien thing into the wall, and suddenly people are like, it's a jungle outside. But it's like, there was not a lot of buildup to that prior to, like, we can't go outside. It's the wasted earth or whatever, like,
right.
That. They don't play that up at all. That should be something that should be played up.
Maybe that's something that would be fixed with the missing footage. Maybe I don't know. But yeah, it is. It's like, yeah, this movie's just a mess. It's unfortunate. Like, it seems like everyone involved too knew that it was, like, not good, even as they were making it.
Well, like, do you think that maybe factors into people giving these dead performances?
Oh, you think they're just bummed? Like,
well, because if you recall, you mentioned Blade Runner and like that the theatrical cut where Harrison Ford gives this like really half-assed narration. Really?
Yeah,
and he said in the past, he's like, the reason I did the narration bad was because I fucking hated it and I hoped it wouldn't be in the movie, but they did put it in the movie.
Gaff had been there and let her live. 4 years, he figured. He was wrong. Tyrell had told me Rachel was special, no termination date. I didn't know how long we'd have together. Who does?
I don't know if like Charlize Theron at age 28 or whatever when she made this movie.
She was only 28 when they made this?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if she was like as gutsy as Harrison, or as like DGAF as Harrison Ford was.
DGAF.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe, but I think it's just the direction where they were like, you know, this was in the midst of the Star Wars prequels and the monotone voice. Oh, yeah,
this came out the same year as Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, I feel like that maybe was a bit of the style at the time where it's like too cool for school or
something. But you know what, I would watch Aeon Flux over Revenge of the Sith, because one thing I can't stand about Revenge of the Sith is at that point Lucas is like, we're just going to film everything in green screen. I don't care. Like, the only real thing in the scene will be the actors and the chairs they're sitting on. You know
this
I mean?
Probably is a better movie than Revenge of the Sith.
Neither are good movies, but no. I would rather watch Aeon Flux over Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, probably. Revenge of the Sith is probably, like, really long, too.
I think it's, like, 220, something like that. This is an hour and a half.
That's too long. Two hours, 20 minutes. That's too long for a Star Wars. Yeah, but yeah, it has some cool sets. It could have more cool sets. Like I would like to see more of the something cool Blade Runner does is shows a lot of just like the day to day life. You know, what do the restaurants look like in this world, or like what do like the normal houses look like? And like,
yeah, I wanted more stuff. I wanted more stuff like when she wakes up and she like takes that glass of water and I love sci-fi shit like this where she does the thing and suddenly it becomes like carbonated and turns into something
else. That was making me think of like Next Generation or something. Yeah. But it's just, such a little thing where it's like, look at this future drink where like, she pours water, it fizzes, then it turns a different color. I'm like, what the hell is that?
That's the kind of future tech I want to see.
That was probably one of the best scenes of the movie.
Honestly, yes. The spy tech was the kind of future tech where it's just like, I don't understand this. It just does anything that she wants it to do. Like, I didn't understand. Yeah. I didn't understand the limits of the technology in the world in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem.
I don't know if it is a problem with a movie like this, though. Like, I don't know if I need to understand, like, I don't know.
It kind of gets into like, I don't understand why she is a superhero. Like it seems as if she's just a normal person, but she's flipping around like Spider-Man. There was a moment that made me laugh so hard. I think it was when it's her and her friend, her fellow assassin, are going to storm. They're going on to kill Trevor Goodchild.
Is this hands for feet?
Hands for feet. Sathandra. They literally travel by backflip. There's a scene where they're like trapped. They're not running. They're traveling by backflip. And it's the funniest thing I've seen in some time.
There's some flips and jumps with Charlize Theron in this movie that are like the most, like, you can't see the wires, but you can see the wires so much. Like,
definitely.
very much like wire foo or something, but like not... I don't know. I don't know if I like it or not, but it's like blatant and just like, yeah, it is like, it's kind of fun, but it's, and the way that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is sort of like, there's zero, it's just like, okay, I guess they just do that. Like there's no like explanation really of like why she's able to do this. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and again, I wouldn't mind that if I cared about her character at all. But it's just like, I don't care about her plight. I don't care. You know, it's just, I don't know. Like that scene she has with her sister when she's just like, you don't do enough to fight. You know what I mean? Like to fight the rebellion. And the sister's like, why don't you just go along with it? You know what I mean? And again, it's all delivered so lifelessly. The dialogue and just like, I will say this. This is a movie where you definitely need to watch it with popcorn because the popcorn, the greatness of the popcorn you're eating can offset some of the blandness that the movie is giving you, you know?
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm looking at like some of the dialogue from this movie, and it's all the most like monotone exposition dumps or like attempts at one-liners, but that are
oh
like...
Oh my God. What was that one-liner? Let me pull it up here. I wrote this down in my notes. Like, I'm like, I guess this will have to suffice as humor in this movie. Hold on one sec.
While you're pulling that up, I had Aeon Flux, her line, I had a family once. I had a life. Now all I have is a mission.
Oh, and then, okay.
Of course, my favorite exchange in the movie, which was my quote, was Aeon Flux says, you cloned her, Trevor Goodchild.
I cloned everybody.
Dun, dun, dun.
What? That is that revelation that like everyone's a clone is so left field so out of nowhere and is delivered again in just that like
I cloned everybody.
What?
Well, I have it written down here. I'm like, I guess this will have to suffice as humor. It's when she meets her assassin buddy right before they run into the poison tipped grass area. And she's talking to Aeon Flux, like, I can't believe you haven't gotten the upgrade like I did, where I swap my feet out with hands. I could get around so much better. And Aeon Flux says, again, deadpan,
I like my shoes.
That's where they're standing on that part. They're standing on the Windows XP desktop field.
Yes, she's standing. I will say this, a lot of this movie, there's so much concrete, like, areas in this movie where like you know, did you notice that
like literal concrete,
literal just concrete columns and stuff. I'm just like, that's interesting. And it's
interesting that this is like in like daylight, some of it, like
a
it's
lot
broad,
of it is
broad daylight, which you don't normally get for a movie like this. I mean, I assume partly because it's like expensive, right? If you have if it's at night, it's easier to like Blade Runner, hide like things. It's all at night because it's easier to hide how the miniatures look and everything.
Yeah,
so it is kind of cool that they're like, no, let's do it in like do some of this stuff in daytime. Like that's different. And it definitely gives it like there, that scene, the action scene, it's probably the best action scene in the movie is like that action scene. We're on the field.
On
you got
the
hands for feet. Yeah. The grass. Yeah. And they're like, and you got the concrete, you got the grass, you got the hands for feet. All the stars are here.
You also have like foliage that shoots darts out. I had this thought. I'm like, where is this? Like, is this just the entrance to like the,
it's the restricted zone. I think it's like you go here to get outside maybe, or get to the
dynasty
where the rulers
people,
live
the rulers,
or something.
I guess.
Yeah. The good child.
It just seems so ridiculous. Especially it's hard to reconcile some like the deadpan, like, you know, delivery that these people have, like the overlords, to this like crazy Death Garden. You know what I mean?
It is funny thinking about like the planning and building of it. Like, yes. So we got like these like grass areas of grass.
Please, more deadpan, up with concrete. Michael.
So we have like we're gonna have some areas of grass that are risers, some raised gardens.
Can we make them poison tipped?
Yeah. Can we just get like probably like 10,000 metal tips in there? Yeah, we're gonna need those robotically controlled metal tips. They're gonna need to retract and go back down.
I have a suggestion. What about dart shooting wasp nests?
Yeah, if we could get some fake wasp nests that explode and shoot darts.
Was there anything else? I feel like I'm only remembering the poison tip grass.
There's lots of little tiny tips. Lots of little like darts.
Everything's tipped.
Yes, lots of they're really big into tips.
Which makes you wonder, how do people, normal people, walk through this? Like, do the overlords ever go in there, or is this literally just a Death Garden? That's its sole purpose.
Maybe they can deact. Maybe there's like a protocol to like they punch in a code at the gate, you know, and it turns everything off.
I did, and also this is another world where everyone is under surveillance. Every inch of this place is under surveillance because you see like the bad guys, they find out everything because there's a camera everywhere. You know what I mean? Which isn't too far off, I suppose, but it's just like...
And it makes sense that it's like such a small world. It'd be easy to keep track of everything. And like, yeah, they could have done more with like... Because it being such a small community, like... You know what's... Think about it, though. Like, how do people not realize the cloning was going on? Because there's not that many people that live here.
They're born and they look identical to past versions of themselves.
The idea here, how they explain it is... They trick people because like people don't know it's cloning, and what's happening is anytime someone dies, they secret them away, take out the juice from them to make a clone. They make a clone like in vitro fertilization kind of thing. So they have like an embryo, and then anytime a woman is pregnant, then they're going to the doctor to get a checkup. They surreptitiously inject her with the clone.
Yeah.
So like, wouldn't you think like, you know, eventually it's like, man, our kid really looks like your dead aunt. Like, exactly like your dead aunt.
They try to spread it around. But again, at a certain point, it's like, it's a small area. So someone's going to notice, like, hey, that's my fucking uncle from, like, 50 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, people are
going
to have, like, family albums, right?
Yes.
You know, photos of people.
We do see pictures in this world.
Right.
People have like, pictures.
That would be an angle that would make this interesting is, like, if, like, no one had photos and, like, no one, like... talked about
the
pastors. Yeah, right. If they're really in a culture of that, maybe that'll explain it. But it is like it is like not that this needs to be like totally, you know, I don't mind plot holes, right? But this is like strains credulity a bit of like you know, people wouldn't have caught on to this. Like,
well, and people
like
go
I said,
missing. It, like, there is definitely like seeds of, you know, there is a resistance. You know, people are going missing. Like, what's going on? People feel just weird and shit.
But, yeah,
like, this
but the whole idea of like they're all clones feels so like out of left field at the end of the movie kind of thing.
Someone
like
would have noticed
a twist for the sake of a twist, and I'm kind of like, not to bring it back to Encino Man, but there's a lot of
you
there's
are
a
just
lot of
harping
me,
on Encino Man.
There's a lot of me that like in that movie when he's like, I'm a caveman. It's like, okay, so what? Like,
yeah,
part of me is like, okay, so they're clones. Like, so, like. I don't know. I don't think that's like horrific or like drastically changes the stakes, really.
Because
it's
again,
more like it's
no...
an interesting layer to the world, but I don't think it's the twist that they think it is. Where I wouldn't be like, oh my God. Like, I'm just like, oh, okay, that's
they're
how
not,
they survive.
Yeah, they're not lesser because they are clones.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
There's no like thing where it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die, you know, sooner than if I were
right.
A
right. There's no like,
like,
oh, we're clones and we die when we're 30 or something like, or we're like, there's some hint that they're mentally degrading, but it's not like they're like, you know,
people aren't having freakouts. You know what I mean? Like,
no, that would have been interesting. That would have been something.
You got to have scenes where like the population's growing restless. People are freaking out and like going crazy. You know what I mean?
Right. There's some sickness and no one knows. And it's not a sickness. It's because they're all just clones or something.
Yeah.
It's none of that. I mean, again, maybe that those are things that could be the rewriting and, you know, the meddling
notes.
Maybe the things that, you know, again, the overall direction of the performances in the dialogue and stuff, that seems like that's a lost cause. Like, I can't imagine there were like, outtakes and stuff that was cut where they're like acting, you know, more energetic.
What do you think? Do you think a blooper reel exists for this movie? Like, were people having enough fun to warrant a blooper reel, or it just doesn't exist?
The way you do a blooper reel for this is you have to make it really violent, and it's stuff where, like, you know, it's obviously fake, but it would have to be stuff where, like, she does the splits to get into the thing and misses and then, like, falls in and, like, her, you know, it'd have
it's
to be stuff like that.
Wirework snafus.
Yeah, that would be really fun to just, like, see, like, these, like, funny, like, deaths, I guess. And honestly,
these funny deaths.
But I think that would be in vain with the show. Like, that was a part of the show is died every episode. So, like, if you did a blooper reel like that, I think it would actually... And the way she dies in the shows, it is usually something, like...
Horrific.
Horrific or, like, silly or, like... Okay. Like, so the first episode... which is, you should watch it. It's 12 minutes. Like, it's on YouTube, and it's just a compilation of those 2 minute sequences from Liquid Television. You can tell, like, where one starts and one ends. But her whole thing is she's going to kill the guy who's Trevor Goodchild. And she, towards the end of the episode, she, like, steps on a nail. So there's, like, a nail that's, like, not all the way in her foot, but, like, kind of in her foot. And she doesn't notice it. And she goes to it. She's, like, walking. She gets in position with the gun, and she leans back to, get ready. And then it's just, like, and she's, like, ah! And, like, falls off the building to her death. And it's so funny because she falls off the building, like a big building, and she, like, looks dead, right? And there's a bit of, like, did she survive? And it cuts to, like, just some guy and, like, a guy in a chair. And there's, like, all these, like, faces of presumed operatives. And you see her flashing, and he pushes a button, and then it cuts back to her, and she just explodes. It's one of those, like, if there was any doubt, like, she is... She is dead. And I guess, like, one of the reasons Peter Chung wanted to do that is he didn't want this to be, like, a long-running show.
Series.
Series thing. So it was like, I'm just going to kill her. Like, which is really funny and ironic that it is what it is now.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Game of Thrones thing. Like, George R. R. Martin, you know, he's, like, a TV writer. And he was getting sick of TV writing, so he wanted to make something that would never be adaptable to any. And that was how I started writing the Game of Thrones series.
Oh, George. Well, and he wouldn't finish. It would be they would end up having to clone George R. R. Martin, and he would have to live into the year 2415 for him to finally finish the Game of Thrones series.
Yeah, well, any closing thoughts? Cody's working on finding that in the waste, I think.
Well, any closing thoughts on Aeon Flux, or should we get into lack of recommendations?
I do want to shout out, this was a prime UMD film.
Oh, yes!
And it just that is a time and place. There's a part of me that I don't have enough bottle caps for this. Like, but if I ever get dumb rich, if I ever win the Bartertown lottery or, you know, and I just have dumb money to throw around, it would be kind of fun to just get, like, an old PSP and a bunch of UMDs. Like what a form. Like, in my mind, the core UMDs are, like, Office Space, an episode of Family Guy, and
Spider-Man 2
and Aeon Flux. Like, those are the UMDs.
Dude, I remember like being on a road trip with my dad and watching Spider-Man 2 on UMD with my PSP and thinking it was, like, the coolest. Like, we had essentially met, like, Aeon Flux levels of technology with the PSP.
And, I mean, and it was, I think the PSP was just a little ahead of its time. It was like a smartphone before it, but it wasn't a phone, but it could do, like, you know, and I used it as, like, an MP3 player, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Melgar, that PSP is pretty cool.
it was a big screen. It was very comfortable to hold, you know. And I remember playing Ridge Racer on that thing and loving it.
Oh, Ridge Racer on that was so good.
Yeah.
On the Grand Theft Auto Liberty City stories. It was like I remember that was a big moment. It's like I'm at school playing Grand Theft Auto. Like, I felt like the coolest kid.
Like, the future is here.
The future is here.
Well, the future is here. It's also female this whole summer, folks. Unfortunately, I wish we could have started off with a better movie, but at the same time, this whole film fest was bred from spite.
It can only go up.
It can only go up, yeah. But
and I think
it will. Time,
I think we have some good stuff. There's like some definitely good movies we'll be watching.
Well, so I think it's safe to say neither of us recommend this movie, right?
Yeah, I wish there was something here, but it's like I almost like feel bad watching it. Like it's just like you can tell, like everyone probably knew this was just not.
This is probably going to be one of the low points of the summer, and it's a good thing that we're getting it out of the way early.
I would recommend go seek out the it's on ChadTube. Just watch like episode. Any of you look like pilot Aeon Flux or something? It's there. It's pretty cool.
I got good news for you, listeners. If you were disappointed at the lack of boobs in this movie, then you're going to love the next entry in Hot Days Summer
Film
Fest.
This is what a great start to our feminist Summer Film Fest, Dave.
If anyone out there was disappointed in the lack of boobs, then you're going to love our next entry. As Hot Dave Summer Film Fest Volume 5, The Future is Super Female Returns, we'll be coming back with, I believe it's 1996's gratuitous nudity-filled Pamela Anderson starring Barbed Wire.
I mean, like an electric guitar, like, wow!
Get your boxes of tissues ready, folks. We're watching right, Barbed Wire.
All right.
I like my shoes.